Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. We'll be here with a new episode for you right after this quick note. With the NFL playoffs right around the corner and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all of the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get in on the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello. James Williams of the Southern California News Group is back here with another Believe in UCLA Football episode. And I'm happy to be joined today by my colleague for the Orange County Register and the Southern California News Group, John W. Davis. John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, James.
Always appreciate having you on. We've obviously worked together quite a bit, been to a number of different events together, just as recently as the Rose Bowl game. We'll probably touch on that a little bit later on in this episode. But one of the many duties you have, much like myself, we wear a lot of different hats, do a lot of different things here. But one of your newest duties is covering the UCLA men's basketball team. And I wanted to spend some time talking about that today, mainly because usually when things get a little rocky with the football season down the road, you get into the grind of the season, fans start kind of wavering and they're like, oh, you know, the media's starting to talk to the basketball team. The basketball team's also practicing, and they start looking at basketball as their saving grace and the thing that's going to save them from all things that are going wrong with the football team. But that hasn't been the case so far with the basketball team, it seems. There's a number of different topics we can talk about, but let's just jump right into what the season has been like for you covering the team and just kind of what is your overall just kind of diagnosing this team. What's wrong with them?
Well, first of all, I want to say it has been that case if you are somebody who is dedicated and has been watching the UCLA women's basketball team. First of all, shout out to them. They're 14-0, number two in the nation. I don't have the pleasure of being their beat reporter, but if I did, then I would say all is fair in Bruins basketball. But on the men's side, that's where they've got some work to do. After 15 games, this team is 6-9. They're 1-3 in conference, like a 3-game losing streak, lost 4 straight at home. Like, there's so many negatives going on right now. And I think a lot of this has to do not with the team's defense, because they have the best defense when it comes to holding teams to a certain amount of points in the Pac-12, but they have not been scoring enough points to win games. And Coach Mick Cronin, I talk to him about this often, and sometimes he even knows that I'm going to ask the question before I ask the question. I basically have talked to him several times about what is it going to take for this team to win? Like, what do they have to learn about winning? And, you know, he will often say that, first of all, my best player is Adem Bona. But Adem Bona, the sophomore forward who sometimes plays center, he's a person who needs somebody else to run with him. Like, he's not going to be the person that's going to take it coast to coast and score like that. He's not a point forward. This is a power forward who needs a guard or a wing player, or preferably both, to get him the ball. Like last year, Tiger and Jaime, like those types of players to make this guy shine. Now, yes, he may be the team's best player, but right now he hasn't really been the team's go-to scorer. That is actually a freshman guard by the name of Sebastian Mack. This guy's averaging 14.3 points through the first 15 games. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people necessarily saw this coming, but this is kind of where the roster is. When you have seven true freshmen 8 newcomers and only one senior who is a redshirt senior who is a backup big for this team. Like, they're just searching, and they still haven't found the answers midway through the season, James.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because a lot of and just obviously this is the UCLA football podcast, so I always find a way to kind of translate it or kind of compare it in a way. But it reminds me of what the UCLA football season has kind of been. You had, you know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Zach Charbonnet. You had all these studs, all these veteran guys, and then it's like they're all gone. They go pro. You have to reload, and either the cupboard's a little bare or it's just, you know, you're just kind of having to just literally reload and start over a little bit. What do you kind of have an idea? Like, what was the expectation? Who was supposed to be the second guy on this team? Obviously, Edembona had been the guy, was the guy everyone was familiar with from last year. Who was supposed to be that 1B, if anything? I know hearing all the hype during the offseason, you know, they were like striking out on all these American guys that were through the, you know, through high school or whatever they may have been trying to do in the transfer portal, but they had to go overseas. They got a couple guys. Everyone was excited about that and the prospects of them. Was there a lot of hype on those guys that maybe one of those two guys was supposed to be that 1B for this team? Or, you know, who's kind of, I don't want to call someone out and say who's not pulling their weight, but how did you kind of project it early on? And, you know,
let's do it like this, James. So on this team right now, people would probably project that there are three people right now who have first round draft potential. They'll say Edembona,
on this
who
is team?
Somebody who, yeah, they'll say potential. I'm not saying they would be drafted in the first round right now. I'm just saying first round draft potential.
Gotcha.
Okay. Or just draft potential, period. Mm-hmm. Like within the next year or so.
Sure.
Okay. So they would say Edembona, who is somebody who entered the draft last year, but he hurt his shoulder. And so he pulled out of the draft. Mm-hmm. And then there's the freshman who's 7'3". You can't teach height. Adai Mara. Mm-hmm. All right. And then there's Burke Bukenjel. He is a 6'9", 245-pound, like, power forward-ish from Turkey. So those would be the three. So you would say one of those two would be the 1B. But I'll actually tell you this. I would say they probably thought the 1B was going to be the second person who was invited to Pac-12 Media Day. Now, they invited Adem Boner to speak, and it was Lazar Stefanovic. This was their transfer from Utah. This is somebody who averaged double digits last year in the Pac-12. And so I'm thinking, they were thinking, hey, this is our junior, because he's the only, like, junior in the rotation, too. Right. Like, if you talk about rotational players who get big minutes, this is the most experienced player you have. And so I'm thinking that they're thinking that this is going to be our guy, because this is the guy who they're hoping that won't hesitate when he gets the ball to shoot. This is the guy who they're hoping will be an above average 3-point shooter. This is the guy who they say, oh yeah, he's a better rebounder than a lot of people his size. So I think that was supposed to be the 1B guy, because if he wasn't, then why would you invite him to Pac-12 Media Day?
Right.
Like, I think those things matter. Especially being that he was a newcomer. It wasn't somebody who was brought up in the program. This is somebody who purposely transferred here to UCLA basketball from Utah to UCLA. And so I think he was supposed to be that secondary score, or maybe even the primary score, because that's the thing. I keep saying, like, Edembona, Coach Cronin says that he is their best basketball player, but he has to have somebody pass him the ball. Unless he's getting it off the bounce. Mm-hmm. Now, he could do that, you know, if he just dominated every offensive rebound, he could be the leading scorer off that. But that's hard to do. Like, rebounding is as much skill as it is, or as much effort as it is skill. So he can't just necessarily say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to average a double-double and half of them are going to be offensive rebounds. No, maybe one day, but not right now. So I would say that they're still searching for that go-to person. And recently, Coach Mick Cronin was saying that he wants to develop Berke maybe as that go-to scorer, because I've watched this guy in practice. I've watched this guy warm up. Yes, he's 6'9". Yes, he's 245. He has the size of a power forward. But between you and me and everybody else who's listening, James, like, this guy has skills to be a wing. He can handle the ball. He can shoot. He can pass. He can do all of those things that we know and mm-hmm. we have known that European, even their big players, can do. So, like, I think out of everybody right now, and being that this is midseason, I would think that Berke would be the guy. If he gets going, him and Adem, they could do well together because, like, yeah, Adem is from Nigeria, but Adem grew up part of his life in Turkey. He speaks Turkish. So Adem and Berke, like, they got a right. little thing going on the court. Mm-hmm. Like, he could say, oh, go here, go there. They could say it right. in a different language nobody else on the court even knows. Right. And I'm saying it to be funny, but I'm also mm-hmm. saying it to be real. Like, those yeah. guys have an established connection. But then Adem, I believe he also speaks Spanish, too. So he can have a connection with Adaimar, too. Like, that's the thing about this team. This is a team of international players at this point.
Yeah.
And so they have to use that to their advantage.
Yeah, that was, like, one of the things I was kind of, like, curious about when it's like, how are all the, like, you know, just anytime there's any sort of guy coming from overseas or English not his first language, it's like, I wonder how they kind of manage that communication barrier. But one thing I do want to touch on, and I want to talk about Mick Cronin not showing up to the post-game press conference the other day in a minute. But one thing I've kind of heard just on Twitter and what I kind of remember in general when I was covering the team for a couple months or so, when I first started covering UCLA as a whole, was Mick Cronin, he can kind of be kind of tough sometimes, right? It might be tough love, or he might just be a little strict, whatnot. You know, there's some people on, hey, how many of these guys on the current roster are even going to be willing to stay based on the way this season's going and just maybe the way Mick treats them or whatever the case may be. But you look at the guys like Hawkes and Tiger, all those guys stuck around. And while Hawkes probably wasn't, you know, the superstar many expected him to be 2 or 3 years ago, he kind of blossomed and is obviously kind of taken off there with the Miami Heat now.
Right. But that's an all rookie team player right now at yeah, the worst.
At the moment,
who should be considered for rookie of the year.
Yep. And someone that Mick Cronin can kind of point to going forward as his example of someone he's kind of brought along, especially there at UCLA. But I remember when I was covering the team, we were able to go to practices, watch practices quite a bit, a little bit more than we even were for basketball, which was pretty enjoyable. And Mick was always kind of a good interview, more or less, or at least he was going to give you some stuff to work with. But
oh yeah, for sure.
What is the vibe? What is the tone like at practice? And if you guys aren't watching that much of practice, what is it like during pregame warmups before they tip off for some of these games here at Poly?
Well, every time they have a media availability, I get to watch at least 10 minutes of practice, and okay. I film it, and so I can look at it afterwards. And one thing about it, you know, they always begin with the stretches, but there's always good energy in practice. I would say that one thing that sometimes you see in practice, which may end up translating to games, is that they're still searching for their shot. Like, even sometimes in practice, I will see them miss what you would completely open shots.
Okay.
There's, because you're not going to have somebody guarding you when you're doing some drill and you're shooting these right. corner threes, because you're just rotating through. And so I think that, you know, if this team was able to establish a consistent three-point shot, and I think part of that has to do with the players who are driving into the post, which would be Dylan Andrews, Sebastian Mack, like, those guys have to kick it out. You know, every time, and assistant coach Rod Palmer said this when he spoke in Mick Cronin's place after the Cal game. He said that, you know, every time a guy gets the ball and we put them in position to score, doesn't mean it is for them to shoot. Like, right. sometimes it is, quote, yeah. sometimes it isn't. And so they have to continue to develop that, like, unless you know for sure that this shot is going in or you're getting fouled, got past the ball. And when they pass the ball, players like Lazar, Dylan, Sebastian, whoever ends up on the outside, even Berke, Brandon Williams, Will McClendon, they have to be willing shooters.
Right.
That's one thing I talk about all the time when I'm covering the Sparks from the WNBA, is players don't necessarily have to make every shot, but I don't want you to be on the court if you're not a willing three-point shooter. And that's what we saw one of UCLA's best women's basketball players do in the WNBA last season, Jordan Canada. She became a willing three-point shooter. No longer would she pass them up, and she started making more than 30% of them. Because that's the thing. These are all college basketball players. They got there for a reason, whether they came from international or they're domestic players. They are here for a reason. These players know how to shoot. Mm-hmm. If they didn't, they would have never made it this far. You know, they know how to play defense, and they're learning how to play Nick Cronin's defense more, and they're pretty successful at it. If they're holding teams to the low 60s for the whole season, barely getting up over 70 the whole season, and they haven't lost the game by more than 9 points the whole season, they're not getting blown out. They're just losing, and so they just have to learn how to win. And so Mick Cronin said, and you know, this is my first season covering UCLA basketball, but he said that's the first time that he's ever skipped out of a post-game conference. And other people who've been covering the team longer than me agreed with him. And he said that he just needs to show the team that he was with them, not worried about anything else outside that locker room at that moment. So, you know, personally, I'll give him one. He sent somebody else. He didn't come. Now, the players didn't speak as well. That's not something that you want to establish as something. And so if it happens again, then it's like, okay. But I give everybody one, because I don't think they thought, even with everything going on, I don't think they thought they'd be 6-9, you know, heading into this midseason mark. I don't think they thought they'd be 1-3 the first four Pac-12 games. Like, this is not – it's not acceptable.
No, and the fans are letting them hear it. So that was the thing that was interesting. So Mick Cronin doesn't show up. You know, you guys are tweeting about it, saying he's not available for the media after the Cal game, and automatically the fans just go at it. Oh, he's hiding. He's a sissy or whatever. Like, you know, every kind of word in the book. And I'm like, do you guys even know Mick? Like, Mick Cronin is the guy. Like, I'm like, just even for my, even when I covered him a little bit, I'm like, yeah, there was definitely like a reason. I don't think he chose, like, I'm not going out there today.
There,
I don't want to
there
talk
have
to
been there have been multiple times this season, James, when he has given us 15 to 20 minute media availabilities. And we're talking about only having at most six reporters there at a time. Yeah. We're not talking about a room full of people. So the fact that, you know, I can ask a question 5 minutes into it, don't say something for another 10 minutes and ask another question 10 minutes later, like, that's availability. So I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
If other people do, that's up to them, but I don't have a problem with it. So far this season, you know, he was out with COVID for a little bit. So we talked to Darren Savino, who is associate head coach. Right. We talked to Rod Palmer now. I personally like hearing from varied voices, because if the varied voices are saying the same thing, you know, they're in lockstep together. Right. And they are saying the same thing. Like, they want these players to have confidence in themselves. They want these players to shoot when they're open. They want these players to pass when they're not. They want them to always play UCLA level defense. They want them to at least score 60 points, because they believe if they score 60 points, they believe they can win games scoring 60 points. But they haven't even been scoring 60 points lately. That's the thing. It's just like, it's come to a point where it's like, the defense can be as great as it wants, but you at least got to get to 60.
Right.
Now, realistically, like, 70 probably would be better. And this isn't an 80 or 90 point team. But if they could get to 70.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Man, they would start rolling off wins in Pac-12, and they could turn this season around real quick if, for the second half of the season, they started averaging 70 points. Now, is that a tall ask? Maybe so, but if these players have the confidence to shoot when they're open, because I've seen them pass up open shots. Every single player on this team, especially the ones that play on the perimeter, I've seen them all pass up open three. You know what's worth more than a two-point, a three-point shot, James?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Like, you got to be willing to take threes. I'm sorry. Like, twos aren't going to cut it. Mick Cronin has said it. He said in the last media availability that those mid-range twos, that long mid two, the worst shot in basketball. Everybody knows that now. It's statistically proven. Like, you got guys at MIT who never played basketball, but they're just like, don't take that shot. You know, the sports analytics that's had has kind of moved into the realm. And I agree with him. Like, at this point, a Dembona, all his points need to come in the paint. You know, a guy like Will McClendon, who was shooting 40% for a lot of this season, you got an open three, take it. Dylan Andrews, shoot some threes. Sebastian Mack, like, he's a better three-point shooter than he's shown. That's what I'm saying. Like, these players are better shooters than they've shown, but they have to take the right shots, too. It's not just taking more shots. It's taking the right shots. And for them at this time, those threes are going to add up a lot quicker than those twos. And so if you're struggling scoring, if you can get, you know, 8 to 10 threes down in the game, that's 24 to 30 points that you weren't going to get otherwise. But when they have these halves and they go 1 for 10, they only picked up 3 points behind the three-point line. That's tough. Like, when you score 23 points in the first half of a game and you expect to win it, that's tough. It's extremely hard to do, James.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Want to pivot a little bit because, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, you have a lot of duties, much like myself, and you're covering a lot of area, a lot of ground, a lot of teams, a lot of players. So we're just going to jump over from your duties, obviously covering UCLA men's basketball. We talked a little bit about the Sparks there as well. But also you cover the high school scene as well out in Long Beach, including national powerhouse St. John Bosco. One of the players from St. John Bosco recently signed on signing day to UCLA football. I wanted to kind of get some of your thoughts on Cameron Jones, the running back, and just kind of what you've seen from him. What is he like as a player? Maybe you've been able to talk to him a few times. I know I have. Seems like a good dude, but just kind of what are your thoughts on him as a player and just what kind of guy are the Bruins getting here?
The Bruins are getting a big power back who has breakaway speed. I've seen this guy run 60-some yards for a touchdown. So this isn't just a guy who's going to get you 4 or 5 yards. He can, and he can follow that game plan. But if he gets some open speed, he can turn up those miles per hour and break away and get you that 20-plus yard run that teams really crave now. But Cameron Jones, the whole time I've seen him, he's been a great player. The whole time I've been covering him, he's been a first-team all-area football player. And once he got that opportunity to commit to UCLA, he did, and he didn't waver. He stuck with it, and I think one great thing about him is his junior year, he had more than 1,000 yards rushing. His senior year, he didn't. But I think that's actually beneficial for UCLA.
I agree.
Because he was – I won't say he was saving himself, but they have so many good players at St. John Bosco that no one player has to ever do it alone offensively, especially not in the backfield. And so for him to not have used and abused his body his senior year in high school, that is going to bode well for a backfield in UCLA who can always use another great running back. They can always use a good running back. And if Deshaun Foster sees fit and believes that this is his guy, they got him to sign. Yeah, he's not enrolling early, but if he gets there in the summer and does what he needs to do and he's, you know, feeling good and good health, I don't see why he wouldn't be somebody to be considered to be in that backdoor rotation. Now, I'm not saying he's going to walk in there and be a starter and get 1,500 yards, but that's not even what UCLA really does. Even when they have somebody of that quality, don't they split? Wasn't Charbonneau sharing?
Yeah, sure. As long as I've been covering the team, it had always kind of been a two-headed monster. I think Charbonnet's last year was really the first year where it's like, Charbonnet's the guy, just give him the ball and let him go. And like he was really the workhorse that year. But no, as you kind of said, and I agree with you, much like what he did at Bosco, I think he'll fit right in here with the UCLA backfield and what Deshaun Foster does. They usually go with a two back system. Just this past year, they were running, James Harden, TJ Harden out there with Carson Steele, who was the transfer from Ball State. He decides to declare early and he's headed for the draft. So now, TJ Harden is going to be there. Anthony Atkins, the transfer from Navy this past year, is coming back for his second year, and I think has the potential to probably be that second guy because they haven't really gone and gotten themselves a running back out of the transfer portal. So I think they like what they have already. And even if we don't see Cameron Jones right away get in and start getting some carries at UCLA as a true freshman, I think they're going to stash him away this year. Maybe if there's an opportunity to get him in some games, whether that's a bowl game or the first three non-conference games at the beginning of the season, they'll try and kind of get him in a little bit if he's healthy enough to go. But right. I think he's that guy that they're going to stash away to have in the same way they did with TJ Harden last year. I keep thinking TJ Harden's in his third or fourth year. I think he's now just barely going to be a true junior this upcoming year for the 2024 season. And he played a little bit and kind of broke out a little bit there as a true freshman. And it kind of gave you that idea of, okay, they have someone here for that next year. And that's what he kind of became, especially with the performance that he had in the LA Bowl there at SoFi Stadium, playing in his own backyard, obviously being a guy who played at Inglewood High. So I think Cameron Jones will fit in nicely with that. And obviously there's a pretty solid pipeline there with UCLA and St. John Bosco with RJ Jones, Ty Lee, some other guys that you've covered there at St. John Bosco during your time in the area as well. And they had Stephen Blaylock prior to that. But yeah, they got a good thing going on over there. Go ahead.
Let me add this about Cameron Jones too. Mm-hmm. So not only is he a good / great running back, mm-hmm. he's also a good / great receiving back. I've seen him make acrobatic catches out of the backfield. Several of his touchdowns his senior year came receiving and like running routes too, not just like leaking out the backfield and doing whatever. Like they could split this guy out and line him up. And oftentimes when you see recruits, you don't necessarily believe their height and size. Mm-hmm. Believe it about Cameron Jones. If they list him at 6'2", 6'3", 220, 230, then that's what he is. Whatever he's listed at, that's what he is. So this is a guy that when I first talked to him, I asked him, I said, you know, what's your dream school? And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, Alabama, Georgia, SEC. So that this is a guy who in his mind thought that he was had the ability to play high level, top level SEC football. So him versus Big Ten in a year or two, I think he can do it. But he is only going to be as good as his offensive line. Like we saw this, we can transition to this. We saw this in the national championship game because remember when we watched the Rose Bowl and I'm like, why are they splitting carries? But I'm like, why are they splitting carries between Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards? Well, look who had two touchdowns his first two carries in the national championship game. Donovan Edwards. Now one, he made a really good, you know, he kind of bounced off one, but that second, and when he was basically untouched, like the first,
that was pretty incredible.
Between like the first three big runs that Corum and Edwards had, they had 100+ yards after contact. Was it after or before contact? I think it was before contact. It was before contact.
Before contact.
That's
crazy.
What I'm saying. They were just like just untouched. Like the sea was parting. And so if UCLA focuses and develops a line that parts the sea, Cameron Jones is your guy. Even if they don't, he's still going to be a positive running back who can get you 4 or 5 hard yards. But if they get him a dominant line, people will love him. And they'll love any other back they put in that backfield, but especially him, because he will – break tackles. Like Cameron Jones is not the type of back who is going to let the first person who touches him bring him down. He didn't do it against Modern Day.
Right.
And if he didn't do it against Modern Day or Servite or whoever else he played in high school football, as he develops and, you know, he becomes a part of that weight room they got going on at UCLA and that nutrition, like that's going to be big for him because I know that they have a lot of influence over what you eat from sun up to sundown at UCLA.
They sure
do. Cameron Jones gets in that, he would probably, like
the sky's the limit for him, I think.
I don't want to say Derrick Henry, but I don't want to not say it. Like I'm not saying he's gonna win the Heisman Trophy, but like this can be a go-to back for you. Like he could have easily easily been a four-star recruit. Why he wasn't a consensus four-star, I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't make the ratings,
The rankings are,
but
I
I
gave
don't
up on
make
the
the
rankings a
ratings,
long time
but
ago.
he
Right.
for sure could have been a 4-star all day.
No doubt about it. I think he'll do great things. Real quick, you mentioned offensive line. I just did an offensive line kind of breakdown, preview, recap, look ahead, whatever you want to call it. I kind of took a little deep dive into the offensive line. Go ahead and check that out at ocregister.com. I'm doing a 6-part series, and we're about midway through that series. We'll be covering the defense here the rest of the week for UCLA football at ocregister.com. Real quick, we have a couple minutes. You did touch on the Rose Bowl there a little bit. We'll try and hit two quick topics here. One, we did hear, I believe it was yesterday. It's kind of been a whirlwind couple days here in the coaching world, but Nick Saban decided to retire. Both you and I were there for his post-game press conference. At the time, we did not know it was his last post-game press conference with Alabama. I do remember him on the podium and then walking off, and then his family was there waiting and embracing him. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. But I feel like that's just kind of always a thing at bowl
That's
games when
common. That's
it's kind of
commonplace.
common.
Yeah,
So didn't think
when you
anything of it.
lose, for sure.
So I'm
Yeah,
curious what
you gotta be gracious in defeat. But
and I think he was. I thought he was pretty
yeah,
good. He's not a sore
I
loser. I
didn't.
mean, he's had his fair share of winning.
Yeah, for sure. 7 national championships. Yeah, he's good. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't necessarily see it coming. And yeah, you can always do that hindsight and look back and say, oh yeah,
Right.
that last thing he said where he thanked the media for the season. But like,
Yeah,
when
I
you
remember that.
look at where they started, almost losing to South Florida, like legit, almost losing to South Florida, and making it all the way to the CFP, beating Georgia, who at the time was the number one team in the nation. Like, that was one of their best coaching jobs they've ever done at Alabama. And for them to finish where they finished, like, they did as best as they could do. And they almost won that game. The only reason they didn't win that game is because Michigan had the resolve to score and tie it up late in the fourth quarter when we went down on the field, James. And Michigan had the resolve to score in overtime. But almost any other team that was in the CFP in that Final Four, Alabama probably would have beat them.
Yeah,
So if
there's
Alabama could have got past Michigan, he could have been retiring as another national champion.
And
And
you
I
know
don't know if
what?
that, and I don't know if that means like I don't retire because I won another national championship, but at some point, like you have to retire.
Yeah. I mean, he had like 6 or 7. I think he has 6. He would have been like 7 or at least 7 there at Alabama, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's 6 at Alabama and 1 at LSU.
Real quick wrap up here. We have a couple seconds. Just your thoughts on Michigan. Obviously, we saw them at the Rose Bowl. Just kind of your quick thoughts on them going on and winning the national championship game.
I think Michigan has left a blueprint for everybody. And this is the blueprint for high school football and even below. Like, you win those games in the trenches.
Yeah, no
You
doubt about
have to
it.
have a sizable offensive line, and you have to have an agile defensive line. And if you can produce those two things, you have a championship level team. So if UCLA wants to focus on anything, they need to focus on offensive line development.
And a special thanks to John once again for joining us here on the podcast. Very much appreciated. Always love working with John. Never a bad time. We were just working out as recently as the Rose Bowl game, as we mentioned during our conversation there. Did we know that that was going to be Nick Saban's last game? Didn't think that was the case. But in the back of my mind, I kind of did believe that it was possible, right? I remember kind of looking out that direction when he was talking. I think it was at Disneyland. And I'm like, isn't this supposed to be his last year? Or wasn't there some thought of this being his last year? Only to come to find out a couple days after the Rose Bowl game, and he goes ahead and it's announced that he is going to be retiring. So that everything's been kind of happening quick here. Just earlier today, Kalen DeBoer, the Washington head coach, is now the Alabama head coach. Alabama moved quickly, had several different candidates. A bunch of other guys got some contract extensions and some pay raises as a result of all this. Mike Norvell at Florida State, Dan Lanning there at Oregon, and so on and so on. So Kalen DeBoer is the guy. There had been talks about him waiting to kind of get a contract kind of figured out with Washington during the season. I think they wanted to wait till after the season. But hey, when a job like Alabama becomes open and they reach out to you the way they did Kalen DeBoer, you can't blame him for taking that, especially when you consider the number of guys that are going to be leaving the Huskies for the NFL that were on that roster for the national championship game there for Washington. You kind of can't blame him. A lot of that talent's going to be gone. Michael Penix being one of them, a guy he had a good relationship with. And the reason why Michael Penix came to Washington was because of the relationship he had with Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb there, the offensive coordinator. Speaking of Ryan Grubb, I would imagine he's going to head over to Alabama with Kalen DeBoer. But you never know. I mean, now Washington has an opening as they get ready to jump into the Big Ten here. So that should be interesting to see. On the topics of guys getting hired and whatnot, there were three coaching positions that have now been filled to help complete the staff for UCLA football. Akaika Maloy was officially elevated from his defensive line outside linebacker role, and he's going to be the defensive coordinator now moving forward. That is the fourth defensive coordinator in as many years for UCLA football, but I think they have a good one here with Maloy, who has a good relationship with a lot of the guys that are currently on this roster. I remember seeing on Twitter guys like RJ Jones, defensive back, former linebacker, Shea Pitts, who was on the defensive staff as a graduate assistant. A lot of guys speaking highly on Twitter about the hire of Maloy. Obviously, Maloy was responsible for help bringing in Liatu Latu and the Murphy twins, for example. Darius Mwasa, I believe, is also part of that group that Maloy was responsible for. So now, obviously, they're going to have to go ahead and they're going to have to try and restock some of these positions here on defense. But I think you're off to a good start when it comes to filling out the roster when you have Maloy as your defensive coordinator going forward. Now, speaking of the position that is left vacant as a result of Maloy being elevated, that outside linebacker defensive line position, that will now go to Tony Washington Jr., who was hired over from Oregon, a younger guy, a guy who has ties to Southern California, played at Los Osos High School here in Rancho Cucamonga. He also, as I mentioned earlier, played at Oregon and was a Rose Bowl game MVP in 2015. Chip Kelly also announced the hiring of Billy Fesler, who is now going to be the quarterback's coach at UCLA, taking over for Ryan Gunderson, who did take the offensive coordinator job at his alma mater, Oregon State. Fesler was on Joe Moorhead's staff in Akron in 2023. Not the greatest record for Akron last season, but the offense did average 18.5 points per game and 287.2 yards last season. He might be the youngest coach on the staff now. Obviously, no stranger to the Big Ten as someone who played quarterback very recently at Penn State from 2014 to 2018. So that kind of completes the coaching staff. Everything's in good shape there as of now. No openings available at UCLA when it comes to the coaching staff. Now it's a matter of them rebuilding the roster. I talked about during that conversation how I spent some time writing about the offensive line and kind of breaking some of that down a little bit. I also have articles up at ocregister.com. I'll have the links in the description. I talked about the defensive line. I talked about the quarterbacks. I also talked about the skilled position players, which includes receivers, tight ends, and running backs. So make sure you guys go ahead, check those out. I'll leave that in the description for you. Read them after we finish up the podcast here, and we'll get you up to speed with everything that's been going on so far this offseason and what the direction for this program looks like going forward. But with that being said, thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. It is a new year. We have some new stuff, some special stuff that is coming along here pretty soon for the Believe in UCLA Football podcast that I'm excited about, and I know you guys will be too. So with that being said, thank you guys again as always, and I'll catch you guys in the next one. Thank you, everybody. This is the Believe in UCLA Football podcast presented by Bet Online.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.